May it please the court, my name is Theodore Remoffles, I'm representing BSW in this appeal. The district court made three fundamental errors in entering summary judgment for sheep pavilion in this case. First, it read extraneous and unrecited limitations into claim four. Second, it concluded claim four would be indefinite if not so limited. And third, it found no liability for sheep pavilion's use of its infringing first design. On the claim construction issue, the sole question is the district court's construction of the following limitation in claim four, quote, selectively positioning a generally vertically disposed, horizontally movably positionable stack divider, close quote. The court will observe that nowhere in that claim term, or anywhere in claim four for that matter, is there any recitation of a module, that there are rollers on the divider, or that there's a track for the rollers to roll in. Yet the district court read each of those limitations into the claim. In doing so, the district court misread the prosecution history and misread the specification. The application claims it issued as claims 1 to 3, and which specifically recited a module as originally filed, were rejected over the prior art, which the examiner concluded disclosed a module. Those claims were expressly amended to recite the track and roller limitations. Application claim 15, however, which issued as claim 4 and which was presented at the same time as those amendments, included none of those limitations. Nor were there any arguments by DSW during the prosecution that could be construed as an express disclaimer. And as is seen at page 445 of the appendix, which is the examiner's statement of reasons for allowance, it's clear the examiner did not believe that application claim 15 included any of those limitations. He expressly set out that the prior art did not disclose various features in claims 1 to 3, which were application claims 2, 6, and 9, including a module connection element, a module support member, a track, and a roller. He then went on to explain why he found application claim 15 to be patentable. Quote, the prior art also does not teach, nor does any combination thereof fairly suggest, a method of displaying first and second footwear styles using the particular stacking of containers and stack dividers as recited in independent claim 15. The examiner concluded the limitations expressed in claim 15, which issued as claim 4, were not found in the prior art, not as the district court concluded that application claim 15 included the limitations that were found in the earlier independent claims.
Relax, just one housekeeping question. I guess the design patent isn't at all before us, is it?
It is not with respect to the new design, but there was a first design, which is relevant to the district court's finding that there was no liability for Schubert's use of that first design. So it only impacts it in respect to that. That's the product that the design patent was asserted against, Your Honor. The rationale of this court's decisions in its Omega Engineering and Fiskars decisions apply in this case. There were no arguments during the prosecution history from which you could, that regarded application claim 15 from which prosecution history estoppel can be found, nor were there any common claim terms in application claim 15 with the earlier independent claims from which the limitations could be incorporated. There was no disclaimer, and the limitations cannot be read into the claims from the prosecution history.
I take it the design patent is that issue with respect to the damages question.
That's correct, Your Honor. Not with respect to the claim construction or the indefiniteness issue.
Okay. With respect to claim four, the claim in question, and the provisions or the limitation that selectively positioning a vertically, generally vertically disposed, horizontally movable, positional stack divider. What stack dividers are disclosed in the written description? They are all these L-shaped, generally L-shaped divider units. some attachment mechanism attached to it, right?
The stack dividers are the vertical component of what's disclosed as the preferred embodiment of the L-shaped member, Your Honor.
Is there any disclosure or description of any kind of a stack divider that's simply a vertical member without any sort of horizontal component?
There is no express disclosure of that, but at column 4, lines 15 to 17, referring to the device, it says that the device, quote, may have any other configuration suited to support an item of footwear and separate adjacent stacks of boxes of footwear, close quote.
Suitable to support an item of footwear. Does that refer to the horizontal portion?
I believe that can be read as referring to any components that can be used to do that, not limited necessarily to a version where the two components are attached to one another. Also, the claim itself, there's several reasons why that L-shaped configuration cannot be read into claim 4. First is this court's decision in Legal Florsheim, where it found that even if there's only a single embodiment disclosed, limitations of that single embodiment cannot be read into the claim, where the claims are broader than that. Also in this case, dependent claim 7, which depends from claim 4, expressly adds the limitations of a shells that are perpendicular to the dividers and that the shoes are displayed on those shells. And again, under the doctrine of claim differentiation, those limitations should not be read into the independent claim unless expressly set out in the dependent claim.
Is claim 4, as construed the way you would like it to be construed, broad enough to read on an assembly where there is no horizontal support mechanism at all, just a vertical wall with just the displayed shoes placed on top of the stacks?
I believe in that case it would be broad enough to encompass it. There does not need to be a separate display shelf. Under the claim as it's written and the limitations as are present in that claim, it would be enough to display the shoes on top of the stacks. There is not a separate requirement in claim 4 for there being a horizontal surface separate and apart from the stacks on which the shoes would be displayed. In terms of the specification, the district court concluded that it showed the use of rollers and tracks as the, quote, seminal feature, close quote, of the invention, and used that supposedly as a basis for reading the limitations into the claims. The district court overlooked, as DSW pointed out at page 11 of its opening brief, that the specification discloses a number of alternative embodiments for horizontally movably positioning the dividers. And that includes hooks, it includes lips like those used by Schupp-Devane, and that's shown in figures 4A and 4B. Of the patented suit, as well as disclosed and discussed at column 4, lines 44 to 50. It also discloses other alternatives of notches and hooks, peg boards, hooks and pins, and eyes and hooks, and those are shown in figures 7, 8A and 8B and 9, and disclosed at column 6, lines 4 to 49. For the reasons articulated again in the Legal Florsheim decision, this court's electromedical decision, it says you cannot import limitations from the preferred embodiments into the claims that are broader. The district court erred by reading those limitations into claim 4. Thus, the district court's construction should be reversed and the claim element should be given its ordinary meaning. And also in this case, because the erroneous construction was the sole basis for the finding of non-infringement, the absence of the erroneously added limitations were the only limitations argued by Schupp-Devane as being absent from the new design. This court should not only reverse the finding of summary judgment of no infringement, but also remain with instructions that the new design infringes claim 4. On the indefiniteness issue, although the district court stated it need not address that issue, it went on to conclude that claim 4 would be indefinite if not limited in the manner that it construed the claim. So we believe that this court should address that issue now. As DSW pointed out in its briefs, Schupp-Devane does not complain that claim 4 can't be understood. It's that it's too broad. But as this court said in its Smith-Kline Beecham versus Apotex decision, breadth is not indefiniteness. Here, the claim is readily construed and it means what it says. And this is an element like that in this court's Phillips decision, where the claim term is readily understood by even lay judges, and it's simply an application of commonly understood terms. Finally, on the liability for the first design, the Schupp-Devane did not and cannot contend that that design does not infringe both of the patents in suit. It was a direct copy of DSW's commercial embodiment. Nevertheless, the district court concluded that because Sheep Pavilion purportedly used reasonable care to stop using that design after it was notified that there was no liability. But direct infringement is a strict liability offense. There is no free pass to allow an infringer to avoid liability because they take reasonable steps after notification and being caught with an infringing device. 35 U.S.C. Section 284 expressly states that if there's infringement, no less than a reasonable royalty must be awarded. In this case, the district court erred by concluding there was no liability simply because 7 months after being notified of infringement, Shoe Pavilion stopped using its infringing first design. Unless the court has any additional questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May I please report? The issue of construction of Claim 4, I believe, is at the heart of the case and the appeal. And we struggled with the interpretation of Claim 4 as the DSW set it forth in its brief and its reply brief, because we really couldn't get an understanding of what DSW contended was the scope of Claim 4. Rather, we got in the briefs what DSW claimed the scope of Claim 4 was not. And I believe that finally, in the reply brief at page 2, DSW finally states that there is a vertically disposed component that is horizontally positionable and that serves as a divider between stacks of shoes. If that is the interpretation of the third element of Claim 4, then the other two elements concern stacking of containers of footwear, first stack, stacking of containers of footwear, the second stack, displaying a sample of footwear above the stacks, and then inserting a vertically disposed component. And notably, Claim 4 even says it's movably positionable, but DSW has taken out the movably positionable part of that, that element and said it's only horizontally positionable. So essentially what DSW is saying is that anything, as Your Honor pointed out, that divides two stacks of shoes and has a shoe displayed on the top of the stack would be within the scope.
It may be even broader than that.
Yes,
it may be even broader than that. Two stacks of shoes with a vertical member in between and some shoes displayed on top of each stack.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that's a matter of breadth. That's not a justification for reading in limitations, is it?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that you have to construe the claims in view of both the specification and in view of the prosecution history. One of the cases that we did not cite to the court in our briefs is Ormo Corporation versus Align Technologies. It was an opinion at 498 Fed 3rd 1307 of this court in 2007. And that it stated that although the claim language did not expressly recite the particular limitation within the claim language, it is what was meant. It was what the specification described. And the court stated that the specification tells what the claims mean, buttressed by statements made during prosecution in order to overcome a rejection over prior art. And I believe that's the same situation that we have here.
Well, that was the orthodontic appliance case.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a different situation here, because there the court was trying to interpret the words in the claim, and here, in terms of this roller arrangement, I don't see anything in the claim at all that is being interpreted. That seems to me to be an entirely new limitation that's being added. I can understand if there's some limitation in the claim, and through the course of prosecution history, there's a disavowal, or there's some clear state interpretation, that certainly applies. But in this case, the only claims that were amended and subject to that prosecution history were the apparatus claims, not the method claims in question, correct?
The method claims in question, the original method claims, were canceled.
And this was the claim that was added, and it was allowed.
Yes, Your Honor, it was allowed. But the canceled claims had the same broader breadth of scope in the method claims that corresponded to the apparatus claims. That is, they have the L-positioned stack divider display module, and they also had different types of attachments to the back of the overall display. And that was rejected over Hoffman, because the examiner felt that Hoffman had both the horizontal display and the vertical divider, but it didn't show the track and roller mechanism. The applicants...
But where in the prosecution history does it suggest that the reason that the newly submitted method claim was allowed was because of this roller arrangement?
In the prosecution history, the examiner states that the dependent claims would be allowable if rewritten in independent form to only include...
Those are the apparatus claims.
Yes, Your Honor, but that would also apply to the method claims, because you cannot look at the method claims in a vacuum. And the examiner stated that the reasons for not allowing the method claims were consistent with the reasons for not allowing the apparatus claims. That is also in the prosecution history, Your Honor, when the examiner talks about the reasons for rejection. And the method recited is, if you look at rejection on JA414, the examiner says that claims 13 and 14, those are the method claims, are also rejected as being unpatentable over Hoffman. So the examiner makes the adoption of the same reasoning for not allowing the broader independent claims, apparatus claims, as the same reasoning is based on Hoffman. And then the examiner continues with, the method recited is considered to have been obvious to one having ordinary skill in the art at the time of the invention. So in the first paragraph of the rejection at JA414, the examiner discusses the display apparatus, and in the next paragraph down, the examiner discusses that the method claims are rejected for the same reason. And then, if you look at
the method claim is canceled, and a different method claim is submitted.
Yes, Your Honor, but the applicant says, when it submits the different method claim, that the submission of the different method claim, there is an acknowledgement that in the amendment remarks at JA433, the applicant says that in response to the office action, claims 1, 3 through 5, 7, 8, and 10 through 14 have been canceled without prejudice. So those broader claims are gone. And then the applicant says it reserves the right to pursue the subject matter of these claims in a separate application. So what they're saying is that they preserve the right to pursue the subject matter of the broader claims, but they'll take the subject matter of the narrower claims as allowed by the examiner to overcome Hoffman for the purposes of pursuing the claims in this particular application. And that is reserving the right to pursue the subject matter of these claims is reserving that broader subject matter for all of those claims, both the apparatus claims and the method claims. So you have here a prosecution history that shows that there was a rejection of the method claims with the apparatus claims on the same basis. And then there was an acknowledgement and a cancellation of the broader claims with the preservation of the right to pursue both the apparatus claims and the method claims, the broader scope, in a separate application with only the more narrow claims being pursued. So on that basis, I think you do have a prosecution disclaimer situation where the applicant has disclaimed the broader...
By reserving the right to pursue claims, broader claims in a different application, that's a disclaimer of anything that might be broader than the claims that were canceled.
For the purposes of prosecution of the application, Your Honor...
That's pretty sweetly stated.
As, Your Honor, it's been my experience before the PTO that when I have a canceled claim, if I'm not acknowledging for the purposes of the application the rejection, but I'm going to file a continued prosecution application, I reserve my right. But my right is for the continued application, not for the purposes of the present application. The present application, I'm consenting to be bound by what the limitation is that the examiner has given me, and for the purposes of whatever application I file in the future, I'm not bound by those arguments in that application. But I am for the purposes of this one, because I'm asking the PTO now to allow me to have this scope of claims, because the examiner said this is the scope of claims that's allowable for the purposes of this application. If I want to continue to argue it, then I can continue to make arguments to the Patent Office on my broader scope. But that's not what the applicant did. The applicant said, okay, I'll take this limited scope based on Hoffman, and then I'll pursue the broader scope in an application that I may pursue downstream that's a continued prosecution application. Certainly, I can't argue now that I've got that broader scope in this application, because that's what the applicant is doing, and say that I wasn't restricted by what the examiner and I agreed to, and this is what I agreed to for the purpose of getting claim scope, and now I'm really arguing that it's a broader claim scope, which I reserve for something downstream.
I think this is a disclaimer of not the meaning of a claim limitation, but claim scope in terms of the scope of coverage of the group of claims?
I think, Your Honor, that this particular language is used for the purposes of two principles. One is prosecution disclaimer, where I think that the stack divider must be limited to the L-shaped stack divider by limiting the scope. And I also think it's an argument that this particular evidence from...
Had the applicant come in after this statement and filed an amendment under Rule 312 to eliminate some, at the time, seemingly innocent or unnecessary limitation, with the argument that we're eliminating this one limitation which is unnecessary and inconsistent with the scope of coverage desired and is believed to be patentable, et cetera, et cetera. And if the examiner were inclined to allow it at that point in the prosecution, are you saying that that would be precluded because it's disclaimed?
No, Your Honor, but I believe you'd have to look at whether or not what the applicant was asking for would be substantive or not. And in this situation, there was a bargaining at the PTO for what was allowable under this particular application that included the scope of the method claims. So for the purposes of prosecution disclaimer, you look at that and you attribute within the scope of interpretation of that the method claim that you're using the L-shaped module. You also have to take a look at the prosecution history estoppel argument, which you'll find in the same language for the purposes of limiting the module, the movement of the module in the back to a track and roller configuration in order to avoid Hoffman. So, Your Honor, the prosecution disclaimer argument, we believe, is a sound one, and that the judge was correct when she attributed the module to Claim 4 as part of the interpretation of Claim 4. For the purposes of the other two arguments, I'll wait for the infringement argument. I believe we'll stand on the papers for that. And then as far as the 35 U.S.C. 287, I believe in relevant part that the district court judge based the finding of no liability on the fact that DSW did not raise a genuine issue of material fact as to whether or not once Shoe Pavilion received notice that the cessation of the alleged infringing activity was not reasonable under the circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you. On the horizontally movably positionable limitation, I would suggest that that is not simply satisfied by placing something vertical anywhere. There is the positionable aspect, which, based on the disclosure of the specification, implies a certain ability to control where that's at and not simply scanning something between two stacks of boxes. With respect to the argument regarding the application claim 13 method claim, I would note that that application claim expressly included the term module. And that's what the examiner found was present in the Hoffman patent. Looking at the Hoffman patent, you'll see it has a series of what you might call shoes that are attached to a display that you can place things in. And it was that shoe that the examiner concluded was a module. The examiner was not looking at the aspect of a horizontally movably positionable divider. And when the new application claim 15 was proposed, there is a interview summary where the examiner expressly noted, and that's at page 448 of the appendix, that, quote, additional claims were presented and appeared to contain allowable subject matter, close quote. He did not say there was any amended claims or anything of that nature. And I also would point out, as this court stated in a decision issued just yesterday, which was the decision of Helms Durfer versus Bobrick Washroom at page 4, that, quote, different claim terms are presumed to have different meanings, close quote. And that certainly applies to claim 4, which certainly has different claim limitations than appear in apparatus claims 1 to 3. Unless the court has any further questions, I ask that the court reverse the decision of the district court. Thank you.